Welcome to the Near Post Local, football and futsal in the capital region, where too much football or futsal is never likely to be enough. I'm Peter Funnell.
Tonight's program is given over entirely to a lengthy fireside chat with Heather Reid, CEO Capital Football. This interview is broken into two parts, and we cover quite a number of subjects. In part one, we cover the failed World Cup bid and that $26 million that disappeared into the AFL bank account for Greater Western Sydney, and the impact of both on the development of football and the opportunities for football in the ACT region. We reflect also on the A-League for Canberra bid in the light of both of these developments. We then speak of Canberra United and a couple of other subjects I think you'll find very interesting indeed. Go to part two for a whole range of other subjects. One thing I would like to say before this interview gets underway, the CEO, Heather Reid, has always made herself available to be interviewed by the Near Post Local. I don't think we can ask for more than that. We don't always find ourselves in agreement with the direction or the decisions that Capital Football has taken. Well, that's life and it's football. And if you want your say, you need to get yourself out there and make yourself available to get on the board of Capital Football and or lobby the zone reps and get your opinions heard. But if you don't participate in the operational matters in football, then you've no right to complain. If your club's not happy, you need to start talking. That said, there's a lot going on in football. I hope you enjoy this interview. I certainly did. You should come away with one impression. This football business is complicated business. The truth is, it's very political, and we are influenced by the decisions the FFA is taking far more than we realise. And the subjects in part one of this interview give you a very clear understanding of that. The CEO has to track across all of that ground. It's regrettable that we don't appear to have the power we need to influence the outcomes, and outcomes that would be best for the development of football in the ACT. That, I suggest, is the challenge in front of the Capital Football Board in the next year. So sit back, cup of tea in hand, turn the volume up, and have a good listen to the discussion. Hope you enjoy it. Talking to Heather Reid, CEO of Capital Football, one of the many talks that we've had through the year, and this is a nice one to wind up the year, and then the year starts again.
Does the year ever finish? Does it ever finish, Peter?
Not for football.
Not for football. Not when you mix in some futsal and summer competitions and Canberra United. It's almost never ending.
Yeah. Don't think there's a sport in the ACT that does that. You?
Well, I'd probably think, you know, basketball might have a winter competition, but the numbers aren't anywhere near like what we've got, and touch football has a winter and a summer season, but, you know, it's not engaged in the variety of competitions that we run or indeed, you know, looking after a team in a national league.
It's amazing. Really, the year never ends. Well, lots to talk about. Why don't we start with the World Cup bid? I'll get this out of the road. Qatar. What do you reckon?
Well, look, I mean, there's been a lot of speculation. You can see the comments in the media. There's also a lot of anger and disappointment and no doubt people who, you know, were behind some of the bidding nations, whether it's, you know, the likes of the Prime Minister of Great Britain and the Prince William, right through to our beloved Frank Lowy and Ben Buckley with the Governor-General. I mean, I think they'll be feeling very angry about the process and I guess the outcome, mainly based on trust issues and the fact that, you know, a lot of the members of the FIFA executive had obviously given some indication to bidding nations about the way in which they were going to vote. But when it came to the crunch and this, you know, so-called secret ballot, those promises weren't fulfilled.
someone is not telling the truth.
Well, again, you know, people will say that the truth will come out in the next few years. There'll be lots of books written about it.
Won't help us, though, will it?
Well, it won't help us. And, you know, I think we can hold our heads high that I think, you know, the Australian bid was done with integrity and playing within the rules. Whether or not that was the best way to go, so be it. But I think the work that Frank Lowy in particular did in putting football in Australia on the world map and raising the profile of Football Federation Australia right across the globe can't be underestimated. I'm a bit annoyed that people are saying it was a waste of $43 or $45 million. I think, you know, over 3 years, it's $15 million on football, on tourism, on promoting or branding Australia, as the Federal Sports Minister Mark Habib said. It's branding Australia. And if it had come off, people would have forgotten that $43 million and they'd be looking forward to the next 120 or whatever.
Oh, yeah, success is a thousand fathers, as they say. But I mean, that's the money you've got to spend if you want to be in that sort of game, isn't it? You know, you want to do business at that level, that's what's going to...
And some would speculate that other bidding nations probably spent five times that, whether it was up front or in brown paper bags, who knows?
Look, realistically, though, I mean, it's a terribly sad thing because of this roster system they have with World Cup bids. Unlike the Olympics, they just shop around for the best deal. We won't be able to bid before 2030 now, I understand, before our turn comes around.
Well, we could probably bid, but then realistically, whether we'd get the you know, the 2026 or the 2030, you know, and it's anyone's game. I mean,
Far out, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I find it quite interesting looking back at the little bit of history on the FIFA World Cups that it was traditionally, you know, between, you know, it went from a European country to a South America. In fact, it started in a South American country, and then it went to Europe, South America, Europe. And the biggest complaint in those, you know, the 1930s and 40s was the time that it took to go by boat from the Americas to Europe, you know, a three-week boat trip, heaven forbid. And now people are concerned about, you know, whether or not they can see games within a particular time zone on an amazing, you know, digital TV and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know, the speculation that China will probably want to go for the 2030 World Cup, again, it's speculation. Who knows what will happen? The speculation that maybe Qatar won't be able to host it for some reason in 2022. Maybe the whole thing will fall over. But, I mean, Peter, will we be around to see it? I'm not sure.
And no, nor am I, mate, but I've resigned myself to getting a 3D television.
But exactly, and the world is so small that whether it's in your own backyard here or in Australia or if it's in China or Brazil or somewhere, we will still travel to go and watch the games. We've got plenty of opportunity to bid for other FIFA events. I'd personally like to see, you know, us bidding for the 2019 Women's World Cup. I think that would be fantastic. Yeah. We'll be ready for it then.
Yeah.
Next year in Germany, 2015, it will probably go to a South American country, I would suggest. It hasn't been held there. And then we'll be ready for 2019. The Under-20s Men's World Cup is another great event. We've previously hosted it in Australia.
Yeah.
And, of course, an Under-17 World Cup.
Mm.
Probably much more within our scope of hosting and hosting very well those kinds of events. And I expect that FIFA and AFC will announce fairly soon the decision on the 2015 Asia Cup.
Oh, yes, that's important.
Yeah, which should be in Australia. And for Canberra.
Here in Canberra, you reckon?
The six games and a quarter final is what's on the table at the moment.
For Canberra?
For Canberra.
Where are they going to play those, do you reckon?
At Canberra Stadium. It's ready for Asia Cup size. They need a stadium that can take about 20 to 25,000 people. By 2015, it might mean the ACT government will put in a little bit of development in the technology and the media side of things, as well as perhaps some of the corporate boxes. But Canberra Stadium's pretty much ready to go.
Oh, that's excellent. But the other thing I wanted to ask you is, the losing this World Cup, there was a lot of talk in the build-up to this bid about how Canberra would get a new football stadium as part of the deal. You know, well, promises come cheap, but given that there was some prospect of playing games here and reason to invest, that's a unexpected damage to us going forward, yeah?
Well, I'm not sure. I mean, the Canberra Stadium's, close to 30 years old, is it?
Yeah.
And so it needs to have some upgrading. plan that I understand the ACT government looked at was whether or not the current Canberra Stadium should be upgraded for the purposes of a World Cup related activity if we got the 2022. And I'm actually saying that we didn't actually lose the 2022 World Cup, we just didn't win it.
Well, that's true, huh?
You know,
you can't lose something you never got.
Yeah.
In that sense.
We didn't win it. But anyway... It
was a refurb at Canberra Stadium, or was it a new... I thought it was a new one.
There was actually... There's three things on the cards. One was the refurb of Canberra Stadium.
Yeah.
The other one was to take Manuka Oval to a higher level.
Yeah.
But then that's got heritage and residential and all sorts of other problems associated with it. Build a brand new stadium on the sort of eastern car park side of the current stadium. And that's where the brand new stadium was going to go.
Okay.
It would be a brand new rectangular stadium that would cope with major association football games as well as maybe rugby league, rugby union kind of World Cup activities. And then the current Canberra Stadium would be returned to an oval with an athletics track around it, and that oval would be then suitable for AFL and major cricket games.
Okay.
But obviously that's all off the cards.
Yep.
So... Manuka, I understand from looking in our trusty Canberra Times, looks like Manuka would have a little bit of a refurb to take it to another level for the AFL and cricket.
Oh, yeah.
And we've still got Canberra Stadium for A-League, World Cup activities outside Socceroos games.
And indeed, our A-League, our game here at the top level is often played out of season to league and union,
Canberra Stadium, I think, is ideal for when we get a Canberra United or equivalent sort of A-League team. And on that level, again, I notice some speculation that not winning the World Cup will hurt us in terms of an A-League team. I don't really think that the two are related.
I don't see that connection.
No.
What's the suggestion there?
Well, I think maybe in relation to ACT government funding and the upgrade of the Canberra Stadium. There were comments attributed to Minister Barr on the weekend that suggested it could hurt us, but FFA is currently conducting a complete review of the A-League.
And I
wouldn't be surprised if when that review is completed they recommend to take it back to a 10 club competition, and that the future of clubs like North Queensland and maybe even Western Rovers will be severely under the spotlight.
Well, look, let's just talk just briefly about this $26 million that for 10 years that the ACT government's invested in the AFL Greater Western Sydney team. Now, I'm not going to beat AFL to death. They got $26 million. Good luck to them. I wish we had it. I suppose if I just declare my position, I suppose the frustration I feel about that is that that's a huge snap out of the ACT sports come something else budget. I'm just wondering, what have they got left for us for football? How empty is this bucket going to be when we need development? Well, we need the same things that AFL need in terms of development.
I don't think it's come out of any sports budget. I mean, it's come out of ACT government money. ACT government money. My understanding is that it's tourism and it's chief minister's related money. So it's about the branding of Canberra within the nation. And again, just briefly talking to Andrew Barr about the reasons for this, it's a lot to do with promoting Canberra as a place to come and visit. Whether or not that's worth $26 million over how many years was it?
Ten
years. So that's $2.5 million a year.
$650,000 a game.
Yeah, $500,000 I think goes directly to the AFL, and the other is spent on promotion and on some football academy and other sorts of things. I don't know the detail, but it's clearly about trying to position Canberra and the national capital within a tourism market. And, as you say, we can't bag AFL. It's an ACT government decision. Somebody suggested it was a courageous decision by the sports minister, but because he's also tourism minister as well.
I hadn't missed that.
So it's an important connection, and more so because the AFL is about to renegotiate its television rights. So those and the television rights are apparently going to be around about $1 billion per year. And it's about getting the Canberra brand on TV and into homes, especially around the sort of Western Sydney and the region.
I've just got to say this. I just wish that the same view had been taken about the A-League for Canberra too. Mm-hmm. And we all know that the... Now, I know it's now later and positions change, opportunities change. I know all this happens, but it's an impossible comparison not to make for us ordinary football people. The extent of the preparedness to invest in an A-League for Canberra team was significantly, very significantly less.
Well, my understanding was that there was... Yeah, that's right. I mean, there was money on the table from the ACT government, but it wasn't a long-term commitment.
No. And nor was it a whole bunch of money.
It was maybe, I think, around $2 million as a kickstart.
That would have been tops.
To kickstart it. But I guess Ivan Slavich and the A-League for Canberra group would have preferred to have gone into the discussions with the FFA along the lines of saying, well, we've got a guarantee $20 million over 10 years from the ACT government. Mind you know, they're also very hurt by the decision that was made in the end, because there was claims of, you know, a done deal before the bidding or the bids were even properly looked at in terms of Canberra's bid and how it stacked up against the Western Sydney.
Oh,
Western
I reckon Rovers the FFA's bid. In no position to criticise the FIFA on this one. And if my recollection's correct, there were three Greater Western Sydney bids that were breaking their neck to get over the line. Smash them together, so they disappeared.
The response from FFA to us about why Western Sydney and not Canberra was that it was strategic. Strategic in the sense that they wanted... Well, it's related to what you just said before, Peter. I mean, it's strategic in the sense that they want to have an association football presence in Western Sydney to combat rugby league and, of course, the Greater Western Sydney AFL. But, again, FIFA would say it's strategic to have a World Cup in a place like Qatar, because it would be the first time a Middle Eastern nation has held it. It's a very strong Muslim population, of course, and they're going to bring peace to the world.
Yeah, I'm all for it. If we'd have conducted our bid based in the greatest sandy desert, we might have done pretty good too.
Wasn't it the English, one of the English commentators said, well, you know, England won't be bidding for the World Cup, or if they do, it'll be after Antarctica gets it and we'll be playing in heated stadiums.
That's right. Well, but you just left a puzzle on some of this, aren't you? I've certainly been critical of Mr. Barr on this $26 million, but he makes one point that I just find impossible to dodge, and that is, well, the FFA just don't look like they got it right. And I have to agree with that.
In terms of not giving Canberra the A-League license.
Yeah, I mean, there was no leverage for the ACT government to work on there. And their prevarication in the end, they came up with nothing in that same zone. And it's a tragic irony, I think, for us that AFL came straight in, did the deal. We're part of the deal in Greater Western Sydney. We're standing around as the football community, scratching our head and wondering, you know, how the FFA let this slip past them.
I mean, well, I guess you'd have
there's
to...
There's a profusion of things there, but I think the minister's actually got a point on that one.
You probably also have to look at the sheer amount of time and effort that key people within FFA have spent on the World Cup bid.
That must be a factor.
Let's not forget on our whole participation in Asia, because that's been quite distracting over the previous 3 years. You know, it's not just the volume of qualification and other kind of games that we've got within Asia now for men's, women's, under-20s, men's, women's, juniors, youth,
fantastic,
Olympic qualifiers. Just a huge volume of work related to that new family, I guess. And so maybe the time that was needed to really look at the composition of the A-League wasn't properly spent. And I'd suggest that's why Lyle Gorman and others within FFA are now having a very strong look at it to see where there are the the key fragilities, and we know it's quite fragile in many respects, but where are the key fragilities and where are the success stories, and how can we have a balance of both of those so we build the A-League? And, you know, they're obviously very concerned about the small number of spectators. They're concerned about the low TV viewership, especially because it's on... It's not on free-to-air.
It's not on free-to-air.
And people are asking for it to be on free-to-air. Now, that broadcast rights, I think that comes up for renewal next year, and we could see a change there if the commercials are commercial networks are ready to go for it.
Well, yeah, I mean, you raise a very good point there. I mean, I'm sure that as laudable as it was, taking us to a World Cup bid certainly took all the scarce personnel... and other resources off in that direction before a time when the A-League itself, which we desperately need to work, before the A-League is properly established. I mean, you're quite right. They're right to be looking at the models of these clubs, because it's either five or seven of them now have come close to or are basket cases.
But we've seen a shift as well, though, Peter, with the ownership of the clubs in the last 2 years.
Correct.
With, you know, big mining magnates like Clive Palmer and now Tinkler and the guy from WA. I always forget his name.
I know.
Now there's the new owner in Adelaide. But, you know, they're bringing a different focus to it altogether. They've got money, and we'll see a shift in there. I haven't really followed too much about what's happening with Melbourne Heart, but they're obviously struggling a little bit. And who would have thought that last year's champions, Sydney FC, would be languishing so much in this year's competition?
Oh, yeah,
there are certainly things broken in Sydney FC that need to be fixed.
Like their playing roster.
And fixed fast. Well,
yeah, as a start. But it seems to me that whether we're talking A-League, whether we're talking... the W League, whether we're talking in our own Premier League here, just our little part of the world, unless communities own an interest in these clubs, this isn't going to work. I mean, the biggest clubs in the world cherish their supporter base.
Yeah, well, except, you know, look what Tinkler did with Newcastle. He will build the community base through a whole range of community activities, starting with... bringing LA Galaxy to Newcastle David Beckham.
Yeah. Well, that's great. They started with a lot of goodwill, and then it.
But that will bring back the punters. Yeah, the punters are there going to. Well, they'll go to those guys. I mean, the Galaxy game was only a couple of weeks ago, but the feedback that I'm getting from friends in Newcastle is that, you know, there's a real excitement now about Newcastle Jets. Yeah. And you look what Ange Postecoglou had to do. You talk about playing rosters. He had to have a clean out of Brisbane Roar last year, amongst a great deal of criticism, and yet he got rid of some of the former key players.
Yeah.
Brought in some new young guns, and what they're on, 14 or 15 undefeated games or something like that, Brisbane Roar?
Yeah, and
playing great football.
And I'm thinking to myself, I always have a worry when we get these single benefactors behind a club. Mm. Sooner or later, they seem to become disenchanted with millions of dollars going out the door.
Mm.
Because football, it's easy for football to be a very bad business.
Or an abused business,
yeah. And, you know, the other thing that I think is worth noting is that we come one layer in the A-League side, and we've got the Youth League, and they're probably earning $5,000 a player. There's no living wage there.
But then
we go across to the W League, so we've got a national competition there at the highest level of women. They're one step away from the Matildas.
Mm-hmm.
And these girls don't get paid.
Mm.
At some point, that bridge has got to be crossed too.
Well, indeed, you know, there's also one or two very fragile clubs there, and because the model is different and relies on the member federation supporting them.
Yep.
Interestingly, you know, most of them are doing quite well, and it's a much more competitive league this year. I think we spoke last time about the loss of Central Coast Mariners on the one hand being a bit of a negative, but on the other hand, it's been incredibly positive because the top 10 or 11 players from that team last year are now in the other seven clubs.
It's certainly strengthened the others.
And I'll be keen to see what happens with Adelaide United women, because you know, they haven't recruited well, I don't think, and they're languishing on the bottom of the table. Another 4-0 result. If our game on the weekend had gone to its full time, I think we would have had 7 or 8 goals against them.
Yeah, it wasn't looking good.
So they were quite relieved, I think, to get away with just losing by 4.
Yeah.
But they've got a new owner in Adelaide United A-League club, and Adelaide United Women is the only women's team that are being managed by the A-League structure.
No, I wasn't aware of that.
Only one that's fully under the A-League structure has a little bit of involvement from Football South Australia. But the new owner of Adelaide United is having a close look at the women's team and wondering whether or not it's commercially viable.
So, you know, don't worry
about the development of the game in South Australia or Adelaide, and don't worry about doing something for, you know, half of the playing population or the potential population. He's just looking at it purely from a bottom line financial perspective.
And that's the issue, isn't it, whether we're talking about the men's and particularly the women's. We can't retreat from where we are. We can't go backwards from where we are, because this thing suddenly just falls apart. That can't be allowed to happen. But you mentioned the competitiveness of the W League this season. Discussion I was having with some fellow football tragics at the Summer 20, we all agreed there's a physicality about this year's W League that I didn't think was there last year. There really some there's some pretty savage tackling. I mean, not illegal. I mean, there's just hot. There's a physicality, a strength to the play that has been obviously gradually building up. It's a very good competition.
Well, I think probably the influence of some international players in each of the teams has helped that. Sorry, 6 out of the 7 have got international players. Whether it's, I mean, I'm wondering if it's anything to do also with that extra year of international football, Peter, because at least 10 of our domestic players have played in Europe. Or America over the season, plus a pretty hard campaign for the Matildas going through World Cup qualification and the Asia Cup. So they're probably stronger and better. Let's say we've got 70 players with a roster of 110 players across the 7 rosters, and Tom Somani would be looking at least 26 to 30 of those players. So it's about a quarter. We had the W League finals the 5th and the 12th of February. Then I think they've got a couple of international commitments, and then they're off to the World Cup in mid-June. So they'll need to have a little bit of downtime probably in March or April.
I certainly think the physicality of the game has increased noticeably. And for all of those reasons you said, and I suspect also too that the clubs themselves now have fine-tuned a lot of their periodised training. There's a much greater degree of sophistication over the training they're exposing the young players to.
But some very good, exciting football, and it's going to get really, really hot from here on, because I think any of the clubs, with the exception of Adelaide, can still make the top four. I mean, it's tight around that middle group for Canberra, Perth, Newcastle. If Melbourne gets another win or two, I think Melbourne might play Adelaide next weekend. So, you know, if things go to plan, like, as they have been throughout the season, they'll pick up another 3 points. It'll keep it very, very tight.
Exactly.
Whereas last year we saw that, you know, there were the top three or four,
quickly,
and then yeah.
Oh, not this year. Well, we can't leave Canberra United alone without talking about the game on Saturday. this is a once
historical.
In a decade. Oh, well, it is historical. I mean, you know, we go from suntan oil and our Panama hats in the first half, 4 goals, and
galoshes and anoraks in the second
that's
half.
That's right. If you couldn't swim, you had trouble getting out of the place safely.
I think it's the only, certainly the only W League game that started and had to be abandoned during the second half due to the weather. I'm not sure if there's been any A-League games in the 5 years of the A-League.
Not that I can remember.
I know games have been cancelled. Like there was, I think there was a Central Coast game. It was cancelled before it even started. So, you know,
word, abandoned, though. It's like abandoned ship, you know. we all looked around and said, abandoned? 4-0 up, they can't do that.
I know. But you could see the conditions. I mean, it was becoming a swimming pool. The field was becoming a pool. We were lucky that Canberra FC had the ground in great condition anyway, considering a whole week of rain.
Yes, that's
right. They were more than happy for us to use it, and And you know, I think Marko Ristić was probably crying towards the end of the day when it was getting so waterlogged, and especially when the two teams went out and did their sort of belly flops.
Sensational.
I put my head in my hands.
Well, I saw him last night, and he seemed to be in happier spirits, and assured me that the water had drained away.
And look, whilst we're talking about Canberra FC, let's not be remiss, we must congratulate them on so such a good win in the under-20s, the summer under-20s in that competition.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that. I mean, they participated last year and played extremely well, and they've done so this year. And I suppose a bit like my own club, you're getting your best under-20s together and letting them play at age, and then sort of with a bit more freedom of expression. And in some cases, a little less resistance, because some of those young lads have been playing Premier League, so where it's fairly tightly orchestrated.
Yeah.
And in Canberra FC's case, they've played consistently well. Last night's game against our Woden Valley One team, look, everyone just stood up and clapped. It was just a sensational game. Canberra FC got up 3-2 in the end. And
played in good spirit.
Oh, terrific.
Good spirit.
Both teams were up for the game. And you know, the players were talking about what a good game it was. Just what the summer 20s is about. The young players playing, you know, there's not the heavy weight of competition.
Egos?
Yeah, that too. You know, and they just out and playing. The tricks and flicks come out every now and again, and coaches bite their tongue, you know. So it's not quite as orchestrated.
Good.
But it was good. It was really good. They played good football. Well, I'm guessing, I think, when I say I suspect they put the microscope over their players very carefully. Well, we did the same. And that's what you want to do. You want to give it an opportunity to step forward, because there are players coming out of 18s, Premier League 18s, who have hopes for pathways, and players in pathways who are still under 20 who want to hold on to positions. So, you know, it's a nice segue into the next season. But look, that game against Canberra, jumping back to this game with Canberra United, I mean, you just had to be there.
We couldn't see.
You couldn't see.
15 minutes into the second half, the rain started, and you just couldn't see the other side of the field because it was so heavy. And they persisted. I mean, the referee had to persist, I suppose, just to see if it was a passing shower, although it would be a pretty heavy shower.
Well, most of us roared laughing when this phalanx drew up and marched out into the... Well, it hadn't stopped raining. I reckon you could have stuck it out the window and sorted that one out. But look, young Grace Field made her debut.
Yes, well done to Grace, though she attempted to get on the field without her skin guards. There was a bit of nerves, but yes, made comment of that at the post-match function at the Tradies Club, and congratulated Grace on her debut.
In the stand where I assure you, Miss Field, were yelling out, "Put your shin pads on."
She won't forget that.
But just for one moment, it was almost the magical beginning, wasn't it? When that ball went through to Al, who did her sort of typical turn and laid the ball off.
Yeah.
I mean, she was just about up to her knees in water, laid the ball off, only to see it hit the puddle and sort of disappear like a beach ball.
Yes, that's right.
With Gracefield steaming in on an angle, it never reached it.
Or a rock in quicksand,
more like it. But that's pretty much what the conditions were like, wasn't it? But what a great day. A different game, but sensational.
Yep. And pretty happy with the crowd numbers too, Peter. We had just under 600 for this game, and given the weather and the change of venue, it's probably not a bad spectator crowd, but we really want to try and get the 1,000 mark for the for the game back at Deakin in January, and encourage everybody to come along and watch the Newcastle, home to Newcastle.
It's going to be a tough game.
So, yeah, come along on the 15th when we take on Newcastle Jets. That's our almost second last game. We're off to Sydney the week after that, and then of course the last game in at McKellar against Perth. So it's going to be right down to the wire.
It is, isn't it? I'm confident. I think we're getting better.
But can I also say thanks to 2XX and to you, Peter, and the crew there.
Yeah.
2XX have been calling the games live of Canberra United. I think they enjoy that.
Yeah.
I don't know what happened on Saturday. They've got an early mark for sure.
Yeah. Well, they're dry. Don't spare them any sympathy.
And all the best to the listeners for a happy festive season and a very merry new year.
Well, thanks for making yourself available, Heather.
No problem.
Terrific.
Thank you.
Happy Christmas. Bye-bye.
You have been listening to the Near Post Local on 2XXFM, where too much football or futsal is never likely to be enough. Football and futsal in the capital region. Go to the podcast for this program at www.nearpostlocal.blogspot.com. You will find a lot of interesting interviews and items there for the discerning football or futsal tragic. Enjoy your futsal and football. See you next time. Ta-da. Round and round, up and down.